Hello, welcome to Real and Raw Conversations with a Couple of Religious Rebels. My name's Anna, and I'm with Carrie Jo. And we are going to just jump right into part two of To Share or Not to Share. The next question we had was deconstruction is highly personalized. When did you determine it was the right time to share with your husband and family? And I'm just going to jump right in. Hi, Carrie Jo.
Hey, Anna.
Yeah, let's do this.
When
I sensed that there was no turning back, when I knew that the information that I had processed and learned about, when I knew that for me to maintain emotional intimacy required that I remain vulnerable about where I was at. When it changed my worldview enough to where I knew I was becoming a different person.
Yeah, that's huge.
And that's a really dramatic way of putting, like, my ideas or my thoughts about the world were changing so much so that it was affecting other choices and thoughts in my mind.
Oh, sure. Because the whole grid work that you use to operate in the world is shifting and changing.
Right.
So your partner is going to naturally notice things shifting in your decision making or the way you talk about something. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. What about you?
Yeah. For me, I'm very much a verbal processor, and it took me a long time to process the things that I was learning and unlearning before I got to a point where I could actually articulate it. And that was a really weird space for me to be in because I just word vomit everything. Steven is always there to catch it and listen. But it was the strangest experience because I just couldn't put words to anything yet. And so it wasn't honestly a conscious choice, like, oh, today's the day I need to share. It was almost like I had to wait until I was able to actually articulate the things I was experiencing and the things that were shifting.
You were able to put words to what was happening.
Yes, like I was finally able to form some sort of sentence that made sense, because up to that point it was just this chaotic discombobulation of thoughts and beliefs and things leaving and new ideas coming in. And it was a really weird experience. I've never been at a lack for words, like, ever. And look at my elementary report cards. Like, all my teachers would say the same thing. I was always getting in trouble for talking too much. And anyway, yeah, it was very odd, but it kind of finally was able to be expressed. And that's when I wanted to share, because I wanted to share the whole time. It was just, I couldn't, literally couldn't. So that was really freeing. It felt really good to finally be able to talk about it and share it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That was my experience.
Yeah. I can relate to that too, because it takes time for ideas to break down. And when they start crumbling, it feels like kind of chaotic. And then when you're at that discombobulated place, it feels weird going to your partner and saying, everything's changing, but I don't know how to tell you how it's changing.
Right. Cause how helpful can that be?
Right. So yeah. That was the other thing for me, like, is what I'm going to be sharing going to be understood enough to not make me look crazy?
Yeah, I almost felt like, not like I had to give a defense for what, you know, what was shifting within me, but I mean, in a way, I felt that way. Like, I had to be able to articulate something, you know, because he's going to have questions naturally.
Right.
And I wasn't even able to answer questions up until a certain point. So when I feel like I finally had like a handle on some newly formed beliefs or new understandings, then it just kind of naturally flowed.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a really interesting experience and transition of thought and belief.
Yeah. It's very, I feel like it's hard to really truly explain the feeling When, and I'm sure a lot of people out there can relate in that, you know, lots of people are deconstructing right now, but it's not just them. It's also anything else that you've been indoctrinated into, you know,
right.
That is, and then when you all of a sudden realize, or not all of a sudden, when you start to realize and the worldview starts crumbling, it's, yeah, it's such a trippy experience. It's almost like being on drugs or something, you know? It's like, wait a minute, I don't live on Earth. I live on Mars, you know?
Right.
It's like,
right. So it tears everything apart. Like everything that you knew and held as true and 100% certain.
Right.
It all comes crumbling and it's really disorienting.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah. And then like if you, on this new planet that you're living on, so to speak, you're trying to figure out, wait a minute, what are the new rules, you know? And all
exactly.
The structure that you had before is still a framework that you're used to. And so you try to figure out, okay, what is the new framework here? How can I relate it to what I already know? And that to me is a big part of the deconstruction, is not just unlearning everything that you've been taught but also unlearning the structures within that system that are built on shaky ground, so to speak.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. That was tough too. I think, figuring out the new way that is developing within you to engage with the world and with people.
Mm-hmm.
The framework, you have to build a new framework. And that takes a lot of intentionality, that takes a lot of time, that takes a lot of learning and unlearning.
Mm-hmm.
It's exhausting, honestly. I found it to be very isolating, very tiring. And I can actually look back and pinpoint that in the depth of my deconstruction is when my depression really kicked in.
Mm.
And I have no doubt that it was related to all of that stuff that was just being thrown out the window.
Yeah.
It was tough.
Yeah. For me, I held on to some things just to feel like I had a little bit of an anchor, like I held on to prayer a little bit longer. Not petitionary prayer necessarily, but just talking to God. And then I also held on to some things that this will be another podcast, I think, just some rituals and like ideas that I felt like were universal. I held on to for a long
time. That's really helpful. I probably should have done that. I just kind of, as I unlearned things and learned new things, I just kind of like chucked them all out. I'm like, okay, no longer this, no longer this. And I just like was throwing them all out the window.
Yeah.
Which I guess, you know, there are pros and cons to every approach, but, I maybe should have been a little more thoughtful about, you know what, I think I want to keep that one a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I really made those kind of conscious choices. It was like once I saw things, I couldn't unsee it, you know? Yeah. So I was kind of like, well, now that I know this, this other thing doesn't work anymore for me.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was, yeah, it's still weird. It's still a weird time.
It is. It is for me too. Cause I mean, Ricky and I, after going through so much after being taught a certain way our entire lives and then peeling away the many layers, we're every day we still have conversations about what about this, what about that. Like we never stop genuinely seeking, and I include him because we've done it together so much. But for myself, I still every day really wrestle with ideas and thoughts. Pondering the wait a minute, what if I'm wrong about this one thing?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I find those thoughts creeping in too,
mm-hmm.
which is an interesting thing to grapple with. But I mean, it is genuinely part of the process.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know that it'll ever go away, to be honest. I'm not
probably
sure.
Not.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I'll ever truly. Maybe I could be wrong, but I think for true seekers, we're always asking questions. And some of the questions that I used to have, I guess I don't have anymore. So maybe some of the ones I have right now, I won't one day. But
yeah, maybe like a constant evolution happening.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So in your sharing, I'm curious, have you found that there was like a right or wrong way to share about your deconstruction? Or like, tell me about other things maybe along the way that you've learned to avoid doing, or things that you found worked really well.
Mm-hmm. When I reviewed this question, I thought to myself, like the first thing that came to my mind was that phrase, read the room.
Yeah. Yes.
And so for me, that was very much, and still is very much, a part of who I kind of gauge to, or how I gauge when, where, how, and who to share with. It's has a lot to do with who is involved enough in my life to that is going to naturally, it's going to become a natural progression of our relationship, you know?
Yeah.
But there are a lot of people in my life that we don't talk about intimate things or share our spiritual journeys with one another. And so I don't really feel any, I don't put any pressure on myself that I owe them any specific explanations about my life in that way. So for me, those are the ones that I avoided, so to speak.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting that you used that phrase, like you didn't feel like you owed them anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what I was thinking too when I was reflecting on this, that there are certain people that you just don't owe an explanation to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that takes, you know, just some understanding of your relationship status. Like for instance, I can share a kind of a particular experience for me. I have just been openly sharing with my parents as I learn new things. I'm like, oh my gosh, did you know this? You know, like I've just been sharing things as I've gone along. Mm-hmm. Once I reached that point where I could articulate things. And so for them, like I have a really close relationship with my parents. I share like everything with them, struggles, victories, all of it. And so that was just a natural thing to happen. It wasn't really a conscious choice. Oh, I'm going to start sharing now. It just automatically happens.
Mm-hmm.
So like for them, that's a joy for me to share with them. But like there are other relationships, other like family members that we don't, like you said, we don't talk about intimate things. It's very surfacey. And I really highly doubt they would even ask me about it. So mm-hmm. It's kind of like I don't feel the need to share, and whatever they need to know, they already have seen on social media now anyway. So mm-hmm. That was kind of one way for me to deal with those types of relationships, like mm-hmm. the ones that I don't really feel like I owe you anything, but I'm going to throw you a bone. You know, I'm blasting it out there for the world to see. And if you want to engage with me, great. If not, cool. At least I know that you know where I'm at. So yeah, I think those were different ways that I dealt with sharing. And I wouldn't say, I guess, right or wrong. I don't know that there's anything that's right or wrong, unless it's like ethically or, you know, morally that way. Like you said, read the room. It just depends on the nature of your relationship and if you feel like they can handle that information.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you could say one thing to avoid when dappling with this idea of sharing, what would it be?
Oh boy. I think I would encourage people to avoid being fundamentalist all over again.
Mm.
I mean, many of us in the evangelical scene have come from a fundamentalist mindset, meaning, you know, these are the fundamentals. We don't veer from them. This is truth. End of story. You know, end of conversation. As you develop these new understandings and these new insights and jettison some of these other doctrines and teachings, don't become a fundamentalist all over again. And I think when you share, that can become very clear whether you're kind of stepping into that camp or not. If you're saying, well, I used to believe this, but now I know it's this.
Mm.
I mean, that's, you're just kind of switching fundamentalist camps. And I think that the whole point, not that like there's a specific written point of deconstruction, but the whole process of deconstruction is dismantling that fundamentalist attitude and view of truth and life and spirituality. And so holding things loosely and realizing that what you're sharing with somebody today probably is not going to be how you feel in a year or two from now. If you continue to evolve and process these things, which I assume most people will, you just not allow yourself to become a fundamentalist all over again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's probably another podcast right there.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, there's a lot that can be said for that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it is tricky. I think it is hard to not become that way all over again, because that's how we processed the world before, for, you know, some of us for decades.
Yeah.
And to kind of you're literally rewiring your brain to view the world and to operate in the world in a different way. And I mean, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. So to be able to pull that apart as well, I think that's a really important part of the deconstruction journey.
That's really what we touched on in the first question, was the structure, the framework that's flawed within our, that has kept us believe, you know, in this mindset of Christianity. Because I mean, fundamentalist just means like on the foundation there's a belief system or an idea or a story that everything is built on, right?
Right.
The foundation begins with the Bible, right?
Right.
That the Bible is translated a specific way, you know, like whatever it is. And so when you don't have that specific foundation, a lot of times what people coming out of, at least in my experience, out of that way of thinking, start building a new foundation on something else. And then you actually start, for me, at least I started realizing, wait a minute, I keep pulling the foundation out from underneath me. Mm-hmm. You know, like I replaced it with this. Oh, that has flaws in it too. Okay, let's replace it with this. Oh, that has flaws in it too. It's like,
right.
And that, so it's just, why don't we just, like you were saying, say, hold everything loosely and keep searching, keep wanting the truth, keep looking for answers, but also recognizing that sometimes the answers aren't just, it's not just one answer to the question. It's more than one answer.
Right. And the answer might change over time. Exactly. As you learn more and grow more.
Exactly.
Yeah. How about you? Have you come across anything that you would say, yeah, I would definitely avoid this?
Mainly just avoiding conversations with people that don't deserve to hear your story. Mm. I just don't go there with some people. Like if they want to talk about it, or if they want to, I just, some people in my life I've chosen not to share. And that's more of a self-protection thing than anything.
Sure.
And that's a personal journey as well. You know, like that's my personal choice. That would be the only thing. Avoiding toxic people too. Anybody that is not supporting you, or, I mean, obviously you're going to have people in your life that are asked questions, but that's still like genuine heartfelt questions are still supporting.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's, yes, like, it's not just, you're not looking for people that are just believing the same thing as you, or that accept you wholeheartedly and are not concerned at all. Like that's not what I'm talking about support. Like,
right.
I mean, like people who just genuinely care enough to take time out of their life and get to know you as a person and understand your journey and ask the hard questions, but do it in a way where they're ready to receive and really listen. People that are willing to listen. How about that? That's a good one. Anyone that's not a good listener, don't share with them.
100%. Yeah. That's, and you know that. You already know that about the people in your life, if they're a good listener or not.
Right.
Yeah.
If they're not,
yeah, that's
listener,
great.
don't share with them, period.
Right. It's not gonna go well.
No. Mm-mm. I will say the next one, that kind of leads me to the, for me, I haven't had any horror stories with, people that I've shared with. And I think partially that's because, largely actually, that's due to the fact that I haven't chose to share on social media, and I have not chosen to share with people that I don't think are good listeners.
Yeah.
Or that I don't think are ready for it. But as far as beautiful story goes, there were a couple of good friends that I shared with that I really have known for a long, long time, and they don't live near me, and we talk, you know, not as much as we'd like, but we love each other dearly. And when I talked to them, I felt like a huge sense of disappointment from them. And, that was hard at first. The people pleaser in me was, just hated disappointing them, you know?
Sure.
It was really, really hard. And it was hard to see how sad it made them too. But the cool thing about my relationship with them and the response that they gave me was, it was disappointing and sad at first, but I knew that they loved me enough to continue loving me.
Yeah.
And,
that is beautiful.
Yeah. So we still talk just as much as we did before. They'll ask me questions sometimes, but sometimes we just don't talk about it, which is beautiful.
Right. Right. So, I mean, that's healthy too.
Right.
Yeah.
Just interested in my life and care about me enough to keep relationship and really just keep, because honestly, when I look at who I am as a person, yeah, there's a ton of things that have changed about my worldviews, and there's a ton of things that have changed about, my faith in general. But as a person, the biggest things that it's changed in my every day to day is where I put my mind.
Right. Right.
And obviously where you put your mind is going to affect the actions that you choose to do as well. Right. But when it boils down to it, I still love my family in a similar way. I think I give them more space, to be who they are and not as restricting. But
that's awesome.
What about you? Have you had any horror stories or beautiful stories?
I mean, I've had, I would say, some of each category maybe, but like horror is a bit hyperbolic. I would.
Yeah, right?
I mean, I guess it depends on your perception, but I'll share probably my worst experience, which I guess then would classify as the horror story, and then I'll share a beautiful experience. But the bad experience, I would say, was when I shared with my mentor of like 2+ decades. So I knew the time had come. You know, it was like you said earlier, I had reached the point where I was faking who I was. You know, I was constantly disagreeing with things she was saying just because of how my views have shifted, and our whole relationship was based on discipleship. I mean, you know, back in the day, that's what you did. Older women discipled younger women. And so that was the nature of our relationship. And now looking back on that, I can see that though there was/is genuine love for me on her end, it was mostly based on our shared beliefs.
Right.
And she still loves me deeply to this day. Okay. So don't hear me say that that went away. It did not. And I realize that is true. But our relationship just couldn't continue because of how we were coming from such different places. And so when I shared with her, she told me that she just wanted to listen. Like, she wanted to hear about my story. She was there to hear and to listen. And when I started sharing things like, I don't believe in hell anymore, I don't think Jesus died for our sins, I mean, the shit hit the fan. And then she basically started going through the whole, I'm air quoting, gospel message. And I'm just like, we're on the phone, right? She can't see me, thank God. And I'm just like sitting there blinking with my jaw hitting the floor. I'm just like, oh shit. Okay. So this wasn't a safe space to share.
Right.
And it kind of hurt because it was set up as a safe space and then it clearly became not one.
Right.
So, I mean, we had a great conversation. I was able to share that with her too and say, well, you know, I felt like you were really defensive when I started sharing my new understandings and, you know, she apologized. She didn't want to come across that way. But the one thing she said is, I am a defender of the gospel. So when I hear teaching that goes against that, I'm going to stand up for the gospel truth. And so that was just a clear indicator to me that, okay, yeah, this ship has sailed. You know, it was just time. It was time to move on. And so, you know, it wasn't a horror story as in like, you know, she, whatever, like refused to ever talk to me again. It wasn't anything like that. Like, I feel like we left on good terms, but I mean, I still had to leave and that was hurtful. That was really hurtful and still is, but you know, that's just something that we keep processing through. But yeah, so that was brutal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then do you have any questions about that before I move on to my nice story?
Do you still keep in contact with her?
Yes and no. I mean, so here's the nature of our relationship. We used to talk every week, once a week. Mm. This is while we were in Nigeria and everything. And of course, you know, that varied from time to time, season to season, whatever, but mostly once a week. And then it became like once every other week as I was noticing we are just not jiving anymore. And then it was about once every month because I couldn't do it. I could not put myself through that frequently.
Mm-hmm.
So to go from that to we basically don't talk anymore,
mm-hmm.
like that was really, really rough. Now that's not true. Like she texted me the other day and said that she had spent some time with a family with three young boys and she was thinking about me and remembered when she came to help with my babies. And I mean, I have a lot of really great memories with her. And mm-hmm. so, you know, we've shared a lot of life, which I'm glad that she still wants to stay in contact that way. But it just feels weird. You know, it's almost sure. like kind of rewriting your relationship with your mother in a way. Cause she was definitely like a second mom to me.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just weird and it's okay. Life is messy and that's where I'm at with that.
Right. It also, I started realizing that how I've possibly made other people feel as well. When
right.
I was still, Bible believing, and the way that I remember just making, I'm sure of it. When I look back at memories that I've had were of people that I know I've just made feel uncomfortable.
Totally. I've thought that too. And I feel like I'm repenting constantly for me being kind of an asshole to people about forcing my beliefs on them and pinning them down. And yeah, it's almost embarrassing.
Yeah, no, it 100% is embarrassing. Yeah, it's very embarrassing to me. But I think the people that there, I mean, some people were able to see past it, you know, and they just knew my intentions, right? But I was never really like, I don't know, I shouldn't go down that rabbit hole, but yeah, it's still embarrassing.
Yeah, totally. I feel that.
So,
okay. So my beautiful story.
Yeah.
Okay. This is really cool. And as I was thinking about my answer to this question, this is also funny. This is a little side note. So this also happened with a mentor, a different
really?
One. I was thinking, oh my gosh, why have I had so many spiritual mentors? And then I'm like, Oh my gosh, are you kidding me? Have I always been like so far rebellious that people are like, "Oh, we need to get this girl like reined in?" That like occurred to me this morning, and I was like, "Oh yeah, actually that tracks. Maybe that's what was going on."
I think it has, I
So.
mean, personally though, Carrie Jo, I think it has more to do with the fact that you were clearly passionate about what you believed. And
Oh yeah.
in Christianity in general, there's a strong emphasis on having mentors or having people that you're accountable to, you know?
Yes. Oh, gross. I think I threw up in my mouth a little
Well, and there's,
bit.
come on, there's some benefit to it, right? Especially when you're
Absolutely.
in your 20s or early, you know, in your 30s, and you're talking to older people who've been there before, done that before, and that makes sense. And in essence, really, it's very not just Christian. I mean, it's in every culture ever known to man. You know, generations of people have lived together, and so they pass down the wisdom naturally, you know, because you'd have three,
Right.
four generations living in the same village or in the same house or whatever. And so it naturally happened. Whereas when we've gotten out of that system of things, I think it made sense to have quote unquote mentors, that were kind of doing a similar thing, you know, with the younger people. It
Yeah,
still
okay,
kind of
that's a
makes
good way to
sense to
see
me,
that.
though.
Yeah. That's a healthy way to look at it. I was just thinking maybe I was like a lost cause from the beginning, and that's why I had all these mentors. Because I've honestly talked to people like, evangelicals, Christians, who were envious because they're like, "Oh my gosh, I've never had a mentor. How have you had?" I can count on my hand like probably four or five serious mentors that I've had,
Wow.
and they're like, "How? Like, what are you doing? How is this happening?" So that's why I'm like, oh, maybe there is a reason for that. I don't know. Anyway, it is a beautiful thing. But anyway, this is a story from another mentor, a different one. This mentor was somebody that I actually was assigned, as I went to the mission field, and she had been serving in Nigeria for many years before I had gotten there. And we just hit it off. We loved each other. We laughed. We had so much fun. She was just like, yeah, she was really great. So she contacted me after I posted something, like basically came out on social media about my whole journey. And she said, "I would love to catch up. I've been meaning," and we had been meaning to catch up before that even. So it was a natural yes for me. I was like, yeah, for sure. Like I felt like I actually did owe her that part of my story, and she was a safe person to do that with. So, we got on Zoom or something. I don't know. It was a face-to-face call. And, she was really amazing about the whole thing. She said, "Okay, this is going to sound really cheesy, Carrie Jo, but I want to set up a system where, if I ask too personal of a question, or it's a question that you're not ready to answer, or whatever, for whatever reason, you can give me a yellow card so I understand kind of where you're at, and that's maybe too much, or you can give me a red card and be like, okay, we're done. Like I can't go on." And I was like, that is not cheesy. That's beautiful.
It
So
is.
she set up the whole thing like on my behalf, like almost as if like she could understand from my side. It was really fantastic and really unexpected because of the previous conversations I had had. I was like, oh, kind of bracing myself. But it was the most beautiful conversation, and I got to share all of those really tough things that I no longer believe, or that I, think are just theories, and nobody has said this is 100% truth. And she was so gracious, and I know she 100% disagreed with me. I mean, I know what she believes. I used to believe the same things, and it was beautiful. And I'm so thankful for that experience because honestly, it does give me hope for any future conversations that they can go extremely well. But again, to your point earlier, like be really judicious about who you're going to share with. Now I thought my other mentor was a safe space. It was kind of set up that way, and that just turned out it wasn't right for me. She wasn't, being mean or vindictive or anything like that. It just I couldn't receive that at that time in my process, so it felt horrible. But Yeah.
Another thing that about that specific situation, and it sounds like, and I wasn't there, and I didn't hear it, and you haven't given me a lot of detail, but it sounds like she also was, I can sense in some people, and I don't want to assume, but I can sense that there's just this grave, uncomfortable feeling inside of them. And it goes against everything they've been taught, believed, and are working towards in their personal lives. And so it's just a natural response to just be defensive, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And that was where she was coming from. I didn't feel like she was out to personally attack me.
Right.
It felt a little bit like that, but I knew that wasn't her reasoning behind responding that way. It's because, like you said, everything that she's worked toward in her several decades of being a Christian, I'm coming against that with the things that I'm saying. Like, her beliefs, her foundations are being threatened.
Right.
So it makes sense to respond that way. So yeah, I don't really fault her for that. But at that time where I was at in my processing, that was too much for me. I couldn't receive that.
Yeah.
Now, if I were to have that same conversation today, like exact same conversation, I would have been able to respond better and not sit there blinking with my jaw on the floor.
Yeah.
I would be more articulate now, and I would be able to maybe continue the conversation, but it just was not okay for me in that moment. And that sucks. You know, it sucks that that's the way it went, but I've learned to grow in my compassion and patience for people who do respond that way, because, you know, if anybody understands, it's us, right? People who have been there, who know what it's like to feel like you have to defend the gospel and you have to stick up for what you feel is the right way. So yeah, it's so tricky though. You know, it's every relationship is multifaceted and it's tough to navigate.
I think that the examples that we've given with responses could help if anybody that's listening to this right now has a family member or a friend that is deconstructing, and they're trying to understand how they should respond to someone. There's some really good ideas here. And I just thought of another one too. Like, if you need help processing, or you want to process this journey or this direction, new direction that your friend or family member is going through, also don't ask leading questions. Like, aren't you afraid to go to hell? You know, or don't ask questions that everybody knows the answer to already. It doesn't make sense. Like, leave space to just let them explain their story and not ask them any questions initially. Give them space to just
great advice.
Be themselves and don't barrage them with questions initially. That can come later. And if they feel safe, if they feel like you've given them the room to be themselves, then they're going to want to come back and talk to you about it again.
Exactly. Yeah, that is great. You know, I don't often think of it from that side, or like giving advice from that side of things.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. Like, we can learn from our experiences and hopefully coach other people to be a better sounding board or a safer person to actually hold space for this really, really tough journey.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's choosing deconstruction. It just kind of happens to you.
Right.
And nobody asks for it, but it's beautiful, but it is so hard.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And I think in the end, we're like in the very end, when you boil everything down, we're just all human beings trying to figure out how to do this thing we call life in the best way we know how. And we're all just trying to figure it out together, or we can be doing it together. Or if you're not going to leave space for us to figure out it out our way, then we won't be doing it together, you know?
Right. And that is an option. I mean, I've chosen that option with my first mentor that I talked about. It wasn't a good fit anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, there's going to be loss. I feel like, you know, as a fair warning to people who are going to share, like, you will lose relationships. I don't care how awesome your community is, how awesome your church is, small group, family, whatever. You either will lose relationships, or in the very least, the dynamics will shift greatly.
You're going to lose some intimacy, for sure.
Yes.
Yeah. With some, at the very least, you're going to lose some intimacy with some relationships. And then sometimes the relationship itself.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So advice to someone dismantling or considering dismantling. So this is, we gave some advice to people listening, but to someone who's actually dismantling their faith and considering sharing, I think you should give it, what do you think, Carrie? What do you think people should know before they do anything?
I think it's important to know like where you are at mentally and emotionally.
Mm.
Like if you're feeling super vulnerable and raw and like open to like vulnerably open to attack, I would say maybe wait.
Mm-hmm.
Wait until you're in a space where you feel like a little more comfortable. It's never going to be easy having these conversations. So you can't wait for it to feel perfect or to feel exactly right. But don't do it when you're super vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And because that's just not going to end well for you or the other person.
Right.
The other thing I would say is you will know. I feel like you will know when it's time. Constantly just kind of have that on your radar. And you know, best case scenario, it comes up organically, right? In your conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It may not. You may have to set a time to meet with somebody or a phone call to have or whatever to share, to actually specifically intentionally share. And if that's the case, then just listen to your gut. You know, like when it's time, it's time. And it almost felt like giving birth in a way to me. Mm. It was like these ideas and these concepts kept kind of growing and swelling within me. And then at a certain point, it was like, okay, it's time. It's here.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a conscious choice, you know, like labor is not. Mm-hmm. It just happened. And so just kind of be aware of that and let it happen.
Yeah. I agree. Take it slow and share pieces of your process. That can be one thing that if you think that someone's safe rather than coming out and telling them everything that's going on, maybe just share a piece and see how they receive it. You know, like just a part. It's a really just like like dipping your toe in the water rather than jumping in. I think that's one approach that could be helpful. Also starting with someone safe, but also finding people that you know are safe, that maybe already understand what you're going through, and they can be people you can fall back on in a way. Like, if you decide to tell someone that you're not, that you think is safe, but you know, it might be a difficult conversation. Call up another friend who already knows what's going on in your life and say, hey, I'm about to call so-and-so. I really just need to talk to them about this. You know, I just want you to know I might need to call you in an hour or two or whatever, you know?
Yeah, no, that's great. Just like a little safety net.
Yeah. Somebody to just kind of like catch you when you are feeling low, if that's what is happening.
Yeah, I love that. That's great.
What do you have any other advice about that?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I mean, we covered it. We
did.
We blasted through the questions. We got...
Yeah.
I would personally say I don't want to offer you up for this, but if anybody is listening and they know how to contact me, feel free mm-hmm. to contact me, message, email, call, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm always happy to be a listening ear. And I mean, I don't necessarily have advice for everything, but if I do, I'll offer it if you want it. So yeah, always happy to hold that space for people.
Absolutely. Thanks for talking today, Carrie Jo.
Yeah, this was great.
Yeah, it really was. We're going to wrap it up and